Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and Seb Stafford-Bloor, editor of Tifo Football. Suppose we better say this six times for effect. Liverpool are European champions. It's an historic achievement, a sign that English football is about to dominate. But the season's not quite over. England play the Netherlands on Thursday, with a potential Nations League final on Sunday. Whisper it, should they win it?
Probably, on paper. I think it's quite a wide open tournament. Not much to choose between any of the four nations, but player for player, England have the strongest squad there, I'd say. They certainly have the most depth. It depends, doesn't it? We saw in the Champions League final and in the Europa League final that this gap at the end of the season had definitely impacted on the quality of the football. And often when internationals are played at this time of the year, it can take a while to get going. There's no time to get going here, is there? It's just two games or one game potentially to get through to the final with a chance to win it. So look, I'm not holding, you know, I'm not convinced that it's going to be spectacular for England, but they've got a good chance of winning it. And why not? You've got to be in it to win it.
What about the potential relevance of it, Seb?
It's hard to know, Mike, because it's the first time through this competition. I think I look at the relevance in the abstract in England's performances up in getting to this point. Maybe after Thursday we're talking about something else, because Holland are an aspirant nation themselves. They're in the sort of, you know, they've gone through a reset and have emerged better the other side. But I think my memories will all be winning in Spain, obviously. That game against Croatia at Wembley so soon after the World Cup semi-final. You can kind of chart England's progress under Gareth Southgate through this tournament. So I'm interested. I mean, Adrian's absolutely right. I think the gap from the end of the season removes a little bit of the context. Also, because of the Champions League final and how many English players have been involved in actually both finals. Ross Barkley only joined up with England yesterday, I think. So we're dealing with a little bit of a fool's economy here. But it's been a tremendous positive, regardless of what happens from this point.
Yeah. I think what struck me, speaking to Jadon Sancho recently, about the new generation, which is obviously he represents, they have confidence because of what they've achieved at youth level. And they've got like a why not attitude. Why can't we win the World Cup?
Absolutely they have. And they're right to have that attitude. I think for too long in this country, we probably didn't have that mindset, did we? This generation are used to winning things. They've been through major tournaments at youth level and prevailed. And I don't think you can ever have enough competitive matches. And I love the Nations League for that reason. I think that having these matches that did mean something, there was a relevance to each contest, it sharpened up the players. And these games will matter to the players. OK, it won't be the end of the world. Their careers won't be defined by not winning the Nations League or even by winning it, but it can't do any harm to play two competitive matches at a little mini tournament, come out on top. It's got to put you in a good frame of mind for the challenges to come. The important ones, which are at the Euros and the World Cup, and this crop of players, I think many, many fans here in England are starting to believe that they do have what it takes, talent-wise and character-wise, to win major trophies with England. I can't ever remember saying that. So it's remarkable, really.
Yeah. The nature of the players who are coming through, there does seem to be a discernible difference. They're more comfortable in their own skin, to be honest. And whereas England used to be almost like a paranoid experience, it's actually now
something which they're very open about.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly the impression I get. They're kind of the what you get off them is that all of that fatalism from the past is kind of old man nonsense, which they don't have time for.
Yeah.
And actually, you can see it in the way they play the game. I mean, I think for a long time this country bred players who were components. They could mechanically do things. Now we've got a generation coming through who are loaded with expression. They're not inhibited. And the big phrase that sort of Dan Ashworth used to use when he was at the FA was problem solving. And you see that. You see a sort of a player with a slightly higher footballing IQ that can deal with different tactical systems and who can make the jump between club football, where they play, you know, 4-4-2, 3-5-2, to England, where it's, you know, there's sort of this almost a 4-2-3-1. And they don't seem to have the difficulty assimilating to that, which is really interesting.
When St George's Park was built, at the outset, I was thinking, well, it's just a fancy new training complex. What's the big deal? But I was wrong, and I think a lot of people were, because what it is, having a base where all of the coaches from all the different age groups are, it's just made everything joined up thinking. And you do get Gareth Southgate mixing with the coaches of the under-18s, the 19s, the 20s. Yeah. Even in school holidays, the 15s and 16s are there throughout half term and the Easter and the summer holidays. They're there training. So from 15 upwards, it's all one big family. Mm. Yeah. And that has to be a positive.
And it's interesting because coaches from other sports are coming in there now. So they're adding to that sort of mix.
They're learning all of the time, and they're stealing one another's best ideas. Mm. And someone like Jadon Sancho has been involved in that setup for years. So he might be playing for the senior team, but he's not overawed by it. He's not just been chucked into the lion's den. It's something he feels very comfortable in because he's worn the badge and been around the building for so long with the same people. So, yeah, it's coming to fruition. I'm so pleased that we built this facility.
Mm. In that context, actually, the under-21s, the Europeans, this summer is going to be a very interesting signpost.
Absolutely. If you look at the talent in that squad. Remember, I went out with the under-21s in 2017, where it was an OK team. There were a couple of sort of players who might play senior football. Now you look at that side and you think 75% should be senior internationals within the next couple of years. And you think that is, if you compare that England team in terms of talent, but also their exposure to Premier League football, to Championship football, you think if they don't come back with a trophy, that's going to be quite disappointing. And it's been a really long time since we're quite an insular nation football-wise, and so we all say, yeah, we'll go and walk that, and we'll put three or four past France and Germany. In previous generations, that's been nonsense. Now you think this is a very talented side. They go to Italy this time with the same sort of reputation that Spain took and Germany took to Poland last time around, which is a huge difference in just 2 years.
Mm. Anyone, and I'll take what you said, Adrian, about the context of these two matches. Mm. Have, for instance, Rashford and Lingard got something to prove after such a terrible season at club level?
I think Gareth Southgate is able to differentiate between the two, because when you're a manager, you look after players that have done well for you. And I think that Southgate is able to do that. It's part of what I was just saying in terms of Rashford and Lingard have been part of the group for years and years, haven't they, at St George's Park and with the junior teams. So I don't think having an off 3 months is going to destroy their international careers. Mm. Obviously, form's important. I think Rashford will be fine. He probably needs to be the spearhead of Man United's attack next season for his career to take off. Lingard, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where his future lies. But yeah, they could do with a good tournament. But no, I think Southgate can see the bigger picture.
What about the Dutch? Are they reaping the Ajax dividend, if you like?
It feels like it. I remember watching a Dutch performance when they were coached by Danny Blind a couple of years ago now. And it was shocking, not because they lost. It was shocking because of how little expression there was and how few of the qualities that we associate with typical Dutch football existed within that side. So I think there's two things. I think kind of the spirit of you know, what that group of Ajax players represents. And it's also a very important core. So you've got De Ligt as a centre-back, and De Jong in midfield is probably going to be, you know, Ballon d'Or winner of the future. But then there's also these players that kind of, again, they're not inhibited. Memphis Depay, I know he's not everyone's cup of tea as a professional, and there's a little bit too much ego there, potentially probably shouldn't be releasing music videos and autobiographies at 23. However, that's more of what you want. You know, great Dutch sides have always had players like that who aren't afraid to take risks. And I think now they're a proper threat. If not in 2020, then certainly 2022. Yep. They're a really good watch. They fundamentally make sense and they entertain you. They're everything you want from a Dutch side.
And almost like Ronald Koeman has been rehabilitated through this, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. And he's excited, isn't he, to work with a group of young players that are so talented. Van der Beek, which is another one that's really gifted. It's built on probably the best central defensive partnership around, isn't it? Mm. De Ligt and Van Dijk. I mean, that is an awesome combination. In front of them, De Jong, who, as you say, is exceptional.
I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever seen a player like De Ligt. Not, you know, just as a set of attributes, but someone who has the aura that he does as a teenager. It's quite extraordinary.
Well, you know, when you go and watch the under-10s and they're going through the old birth certificates. I mean, De Ligt, I mean, I want to see his. Seriously, I'm not having it. Yeah. He can't be a teenager. He's way too much of a mountain, both as a talent and a character to be that young. But yeah, he and Van Dijk, they can carry Holland a long, long way, I would imagine.
Yeah. The other game in the other semi-final is Portugal-Switzerland on the Wednesday. Anyone that we should be looking out for, do you think?
No, this is the interesting thing with Switzerland. Every time I see them, they're kind of the same in composition. They're quite a banal list of individuals, and yet they're one of the most functional sides on the continent. Shaqiri is the obvious one. He will always stand out. Haris Seferovic will play. I don't think I dislike a footballer more in Europe than I do him. I'm sure he's the nicest boy in the whole of Switzerland. However, as a forward, he baffles me. He doesn't really score goals. He never really looks.
He's got five in four in this thing. For Switzerland.
I see the statistics and they don't make any sense to me because he seems such an impotent centre forward.
Speak well of you, by the way.
I hope I never see him in a mixed zone anytime soon. However, it works. And I think that kind of characterises what Switzerland are and really what they have been for some time.
Yeah. But, if you look at the names, don't leap out of the page, but someone like Fabian Schär went to Newcastle for £3 million from Deportivo. Probably the bargain of the season.
Yeah, no, he's been really good, hasn't he? Injuries have sort of got in the way, halted his progress a little bit. But no, he's not just a good defender, Fabian Schär. He's a very good distributor of the ball, so he can pass short and long with real accuracy. But yeah, Switzerland are stronger for the sum of the parts. That's always been the case, really, with them. You could probably say something similar about Portugal if you take Ronaldo out of it. They've always just been solid, haven't they?
I suppose so. I mean, I'm excited about Portugal because they've got this developing generation.
Yeah, that's true.
I think all roads lead to João Félix, of course. But yeah. it's interesting. They're they're growing. I mean, I don't want to lumber them with a kind of a golden generation tag. Yeah. That's not really fair. But he is a special, special player. He's a reason to watch just by himself.
Yeah, he got that hat-trick against Eintracht Frankfurt was fantastic.
Yeah, he's really gifted, isn't he? It's frightening, really, how talented he is. He can score different types of goals, score with his head, both feet. He can create as well. The quality of his end product. Those key moments where you're asking, can I deliver that final ball or pick out that bottom corner? He does. Yep. He does it a lot. So he is a superstar of the future, no doubt. I'd like to see Ruben Neves maybe be given a bit more of a chance at international level. It's sort of been a slow journey for him with a senior team. But yeah, Portugal are in pretty safe hands, I think.
Yeah. I suppose the underlying question of it is how on earth are the Tottenham and Liverpool players going to come to terms with this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been watching.
They'll be there in sort of body only, won't they?
Well, especially the Liverpool players. I mean, I've been watching some of those celebrations. I have to believe that a few of them will be worse for wear. Tottenham, it's a different issue. I think we saw on Saturday that Harry Kane is nowhere close to being match fit.
Should he have been taken off?
It's a hard one, Mike. I think Pochettino was damned if he did and damned if he didn't because people have kind of, because of Lucas Moura's semi-final performance, they've kind of ignored everything that Moura did to that point. He's had a very up and down season. He's been very, very patchy. And a semi-final hat-trick alone is not enough reason to leave out someone of Kane's standing. I have no problem with it because I think that Kane has an enormous psychological effect on that group of players just by being in the dressing room, being in the side. He didn't play his best, but I wouldn't attribute Tottenham's loss in that game to anything he did.
No, I wouldn't.
There's all kinds of... I mean, it's a different discussion.
If he wasn't Harry Kane, I would have started him. I think it was right to start
him. Yeah, me too.
But I think based on what you saw of him and couldn't get into the game and was clearly not sharp, I think if it's anyone other than Kane, he would have got the hook within an hour.
I agree.
So,
in a way that, you know, Klopp hooked Firmino, didn't
he? Yeah, exactly. But he might have done Gareth Southgate a favour because he's given... got some more miles in the legs for Harry Kane. So... he's not going into this tournament completely unfit, is he? Mm. He might be knackered. It might take him a few days to get over it. But yeah, look, if by the time he plays his third game, hopefully the final of the Nations League, Kane might be nice and sharp again. So yeah, it's probably worked okay for Southgate. Mm.
Just want to dwell for a moment on both managers in that final, Pochettino and Klopp. I thought the respect between them, and actually, funnily enough, the respect between both sets of fans was fantastic. Are they the two exemplars in the Premier League of modern management?
I think so. I mean, tonally, you know what's refreshing, Mike, is the contrast to the kind of the old Wenger-Mourinho rivalry, where it used to be snipey and nasty and unpleasant and at certain points almost libelous. The respect was great.
They're best buds now, though.
They seem to be. There's a genuine affection. I couldn't believe that when I saw it. I thought it was a composite that someone had done on Twitter.
Yeah, me too.
I couldn't believe they got in the same studio.
They must have been paid a lot to be put in the same studio. But look,
I think what they represent, which is a kind of a more organic sort of development of their sides. Mm. I know money has been spent by them at different points, but I think what they've achieved, I mean, achievement in small letters for Pochettino because it's a losing Champions League final, but I think they represent a contrast to this spend, give me £150 million in every transfer window, otherwise, you know, I'm going to leak to the press kind of management. It's that, and I remember watching that game, and I'm a Spurs fan, so I was heartbroken, obviously, and I sulked for a good 24 hours afterwards. But I was sad for Pochettino. He deserves to be a champion for what he's done, and he deserves to win an award like that. And I think that speaks quite highly of who he is as a person and, you know, what he's bred at his football club and the example that he's really set elsewhere. I think it's for the good of the game.
Yeah, they've got good empathy, haven't they, with players as well. Yeah. I think players like them as people, you can see it. You can absolutely see it. And what we learned about Pochettino in the build-up was that he's a little bit bonkers as well, with the lemons in his office, drawing in the negative energy. I mean, come on.
I love the one about the arrow to the throat.
In the windpipe, snapping arrows, walking on the hot coals is not a new thing. Yeah. But the fact that he did it, he said, yeah, you saw that he was a little bit bonkers. There's a part of him that's
you're really old school, aren't you?
No, but I like it. No, I really like it. And I love Klopp as well in terms of his personality. Yeah, the fact that he was clearly hammered, wasn't he, on the parade. He didn't care. which makes it even more endearing, doesn't it? We saw the Pochettino in the dressing room, didn't we, after the semi-final. I won't replicate what he did, but it was funny, wasn't it? And the players would have loved it. So these are guys that get on with young men. And they can inspire them. And I like them both. And it was a shame one had to lose in a way. Personally, I was glad it was Pochettino. Yeah.
You know what's really interesting about those two guys is that sort of everything I read about them, sort of one of the kind of the subtexts of their reigns at their respective clubs is the way they treat not just the footballers, the people inside the building.
Yeah.
So canteen staff, support technical staff, cleaners. You know, I've just finished reading Rafa Honigstein's book about Klopp, and they're talking about sort of, you know, the way he made sure within weeks of arriving, he knew every single member of the staff's name in the building at Melwood. And I just thought, that's a nice story. And I think, you know, maybe being a touch romantic about it, there isn't quite enough of that in football sometimes. And I like that kind of... holistic. I know it's a terrible, terrible way of describing it, but it's nice to see people like that who stand for those things rise to the very top of club football.
Yeah, by making it feel like a family. And every manager tries to make a dressing room feel like
some
a family.
Some try harder, don't they?
Exactly, you know, some try harder. These two clearly try.
Well, it was that image of him with Henderson, and they were both in tears, and it was just, I get it now. I get how this team works.
And this is the reason, this is one of the reasons why they will fight that little bit harder maybe than other teams. They will push themselves to cover their teammate or to get themselves into the box for the manager, for the greater cause, because the greater cause is something they're so happy to be a part of, not something that they're just, you know, that means very little to them. It's, having that family vibe is really important, and Liverpool and Spurs definitely got that.
Yeah. Let's look to the future, and so let's start with Tottenham.
Yeah.
My hunch is, and I'm not alone in this, is that Daniel Levy needs to support him heavily financially. Otherwise, it could all turn pear-shaped. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's justification behind that. I think one of the reasons Pochettino's been giving these quite vague answers in press conferences about his future is because he understands the politics of the situation. He understands that he's a man in demand, that he would appeal to almost any club in Europe. I'd say absolutely any club in Europe outside of England. And he's entitled to that backing. I mean, there is a slight fallacy here that's been around for a long time, in that sort of Daniel Levy has, at different points in the past, offered him funds to improve the team, and Pochettino has declined to use them. So I think it's more an instance, I'd refine that and say, it's very, very important that if Pochettino wants a specific type of player, that Daniel Levy can't get him a player who sort of looks like him and maybe has the same haircut. You know, the kind of the old, Federico Fazio situation from a few years ago. You can't do that. You've got to give him what he wants, and you've got to put the financial package in place to do that. I don't think Pochettino is a manager who's going to bang his fist on Levy's desk and say, I want £300 million or I'm going to Juventus. I don't see it as being that simplistic. It's a give him the tools that he requires that suit his type of management. But it is, like you say, it's critical that he gets that now. If Pochettino is allowed to leave as a result of some of that, if he wants a sabbatical, different situation, that's his thing, and I'd say he's probably earned it. But if it's a lack of backing issue, Daniel Levy will never get forgiven for it, whether that's fair or otherwise. That's just the reality of it. So it's very important, yeah.
And so conversely, looking at Liverpool, there's already talk of an extension of Klopp's contract. Is he in a situation where he can build a dynasty now?
Well, he's got every chance, hasn't he? I don't think there's any inclination on his part to move on to pastures new. He's in his dream job, I would imagine. And yeah, why can't Klopp stay there for 5 to 10 years? Why not? I think that he's got a young team that could get better. Doesn't need any obvious improvement. There will be top-ups here and there. I think you're looking at a creative midfielder and a striker. I'd say Firmino could be upgraded, and
fullback
and maybe
cover for one of those.
Absolutely, cover for a left back for Robertson, who for me is the best left back.
Gomez will make that transition into the regular team, won't he?
Yeah, Gomez will either be the partner for Van Dijk or the cover for Arnold or someone to compete with Arnold. So yeah, they need a left back, a creative midfielder, someone that will get into the box and score goals, but also play those slip passes that sometimes that they lack, Liverpool. Boy, did we see that from both teams, actually, in Madrid. It was one of the lowest standard finals I've ever seen, but not that it really matters now.
Adrian, did the pitch look dry to you?
Yeah, it did, actually.
I spoke to a few of my friends who were in the stadium, and they said it was bone dry. It was like it was like rubber. And it did look like they were playing on Velcro at different times. And I think,
A factor.
Fatigue was probably an issue. The gap between the domestic season was probably an issue. But there just seemed to be, those two teams want a slick pitch. Yeah. We know this. I don't know. Maybe I'm making excuses, which they
No, I think that's a valid point. I haven't heard anyone say that, but it's absolutely true. But yeah, no, Liverpool, the future is incredibly bright, isn't it? Why would anyone really want to leave there? That's where I know in the past that Suarez wanted to go because of Barcelona.
South American players do have that affinity with the Barcelona.
I think Van Dijk
Madrid,
is the obvious one here. If Real Madrid or Barcelona came knocking for Van Dijk, is there now that want on his part that, like, I have to go? Or does he feel that, well, we're champions in Europe?
Yeah.
Which I play for the best team or one of the two best teams in Europe. City might just be the best team in Europe. I'm already at the top of the tree. I don't have to go there. I think that's what this success has done for Klopp's team. Mm. It's ensured that these guys think, wow, I'm at the pinnacle here.
Yeah, because it's interesting, looking briefly at the Spanish press this morning, there's a story coming out that linking Coutinho to PSG. Now, if you think Liverpool effectively got Van Dijk and Alisson for Coutinho, which is probably one of the deals of all time, he might be a warning sign to people as well, mightn't he?
I'd have thought so. I mean, that transfer even now, I mean, it's just the financing was terrible, especially when you consider things like the pressure that was already within Barcelona's wage bill when it was completed. It was just a panic. I don't funny, Van Dijk is one of those players that you think, right, if he was in any way available, how much money would it actually take for someone to prize him away from Liverpool? I don't think there's a fee. And like Adrian said, I want a player like that to say, I understand what Barcelona, Real Madrid, all of them are. I understand that, what they were. I'm a European champion. You know, the same goes for Spurs. I don't want to hear Tottenham players this summer talking about, well, I need to play a level of the game. If you want more money, come out and say you want more money. That's fine. Mm. But don't say it's a level of the game issue, because you're already being catered for in that regard. And you're already being put at the very on the very finest stage that club football has to offer. Mm. And Van Dijk's the same. Van Dijk is, you know, it would take a preposterous financial offer.
Yeah.
Presumably from a PSG.
It's Salah as well. It's like if they offered him £500,000 a week, you know, and Liverpool say, well, we can only give you half of that, but we want to make you a club legend here, then the choice is simple, isn't it? Mm. And it's up to the individuals if they want to take the money or not. But the big picture now is that the English clubs, the English giants, are better teams than the Spanish giants right now. Mm. So I don't think there will be this exodus.
You mentioned City. What will their response be? Because there will be a response, won't they?
Yeah, there has to be. But I think they will also look at it and think, well, we beat Liverpool to the league. We are probably slightly better than Liverpool. There's no reason why this group of players with the odd little bit of tweaking here and there can't do it. I think it's just about delivering on the big nights, isn't it, for City moving forwards. The loss of Kompany, I think, is huge. I really do. He was the go-to guy at the end of last season. When push came to shove, he wanted his best players on the pitch. He chose Vincent Kompany, and he's no longer there. And I think his loss to the dressing room and to the spine of the team is going to be massive. And either someone's going to have to step up to the plate, or they're going to have to sign someone in the Van Dijk mould. Could it be De Ligt or someone like this? A real world-class centre-half to step in. Otherwise, they're weaker, aren't they? And Fernandinho is mid-30s. So they have to upgrade that. Yeah. I mean, the David Silva one, I think, is fine. Because sooner or later, you have to unleash Phil Foden. And I know that he's not David Silva at the moment, but he might be. So I would be less worried about their creativity issues. Mm. It's having a left-back, centre back to replace Kompany, but also a leader and someone to prop it up in midfield. They sort those three out. They're going to be fine, aren't they?
I thought it was interesting they turned down, was it 71 million nearly from buying that bid for Leroy Sané. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, a little bit, because it doesn't seem as if Sané is trusted fully by Pep Guardiola.
It's worth more than that, though, isn't he?
I think it's probably worth more than that. To me, I see it as Bayern's reaction to the Callum Hudson-Odoi situation. I mean, obviously, Ribery and Robin are off now. They've lost two sort of era-defining legends. They need to replace players of that style. Hudson-Odoi was clearly the one they wanted because he's a long-term, decade-long solution. Sané feels like a kind of a smart... He's a German. It makes a lot of sense. But 71 million in this market for that kind of player, it's not nearly enough money. So, yeah, I mean, it might well be a sort of a mini-saga, Mike. I mean, we might be hearing about this in July and August. I hope not, but it has that feel to it.
What was interesting about Sané is, for me, he has the potential to be the best winger in the world. Yeah. I just think, look at him as a talent.
Physique,
pace, skill,
finishing
ability. Yeah. I mean, I can't quite get my head around the fact that City might be able to let him go. The issue must be upstairs. It must be within his character. Something that Pep doesn't like about him, or doesn't trust about him. And that might hold him back in his entire career, not just at City. He might go somewhere else and it could fall away for him, because you need to be exceptionally strong mentally to make the best of those talents, don't you?
Jurgen Löw saw it as well. Obviously, he left him out of the last World Cup squad. Yeah. So there's something there. There's a... I don't know if it's pronounced as a red flag, but there's something that somebody... that these coaches identify in him as a weakness.
Mm. Let's talk about the release of winning a trophy. Chelsea, will that have any impact on what's going on there at all, or is it just almost incidental?
I have no idea what winning a trophy feels like. Sorry.
Thank goodness.
Oh dear, old graves. It's a very strange situation, Mike, isn't it, Chelsea? I mean, it seems like a kind of, it felt like an ending. It felt like a kind of, right, this is a sort of a cursory bit of goodwill that we've been able to engender at the end of what has been a really nasty season, just politically. I don't know. I mean, I it's Chelsea, isn't it? And Chelsea, I remember writing in my, I did an On the Whistle piece for this, and I remember writing, one of my last lines was, I think, like, you know, they've had this dreadful season. I can't remember a season which contained more fighting and politicking and bitching and rumours and he's going
to sack. Beautiful game, mate.
Yeah, and then they walk away with a major European trophy at the end of it. It's just like Chelsea, isn't it? So yeah. I don't know. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. No, who knows? They know how to win, though, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They never win many friends, do they, Chelsea? No. But they do know how to win.
Do you think Sarri to Juventus is best for all concerned?
I do. I think that Chelsea supporters have driven Sarri out of the club.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Because if you judge him, I haven't enjoyed a lot of Sarri's tactics because I think he's a bit of a one-trick pony. I'd like to see a bit more variety. He's easily negated, I think, if you get your game plan right. So he's flawed as a coach. But bottom line is, two cup finals, he's won a major trophy. He came third behind the two best teams in recent memory. It's been a fantastic season. What are Chelsea fans moaning about? And Chelsea fans are moaning about the quality of the football, about not really liking him as a person or whatnot. They're driving a very good manager out of the club, and they might have to be careful what they wish for, because there are other alternatives clearly that could come in and do just as well. But
we spoke on here last week.
They might get
Frank Lampard.
They might get it wrong. I mean, it's obvious Frank Lampard, but it's the obvious link. But look. Coach to coach, Sarri has so much more experience at the highest level than Frank Lampard. It would have to be seen as a huge downgrade to go to Lampard. It's not to say that it wouldn't work, but in the short term, it would be a big downgrade.
Well, I'm a huge Frank Lampard fan. I think he's an incredibly smart guy, an articulate person, and probably an excellent coach of the future. But I've seen a bit of Derby this season. I was at the playoff final 10 days ago, and a week ago, and there are still errors. There are still very hard to explain errors that he makes in his game planning, in his decisions, which you have to allow a young manager to make. You can't take that manager at this point of his development and put him into a combustible situation like Chelsea is going to be and ask him to manage a summer where they're under transfer embargo. They've got a scenario at Chelsea now where it's unlikely, but if someone said to you now, they're going to finish eighth next season, You sell Hazard, you don't replace him. Hudson-Odoi is injured, Loftus-Cheek is injured. Kante's future is a little bit tenuous. The defence has got a few problems. I'm not sold on that goalkeeper still. And you put in a guy who is in his second year of management. Mm. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, he's a legend and he deserves to be. He's a Chelsea icon, will be forever. But that doesn't mean that in 5 years' time the job won't be there for him. It's just necessary.
If Lampard is the man to replace Sarri, he gets the job on name. Not name only, but he primarily gets the job on name. If you're looking for candidates, I mean, Farker and Wilder are stronger candidates than Lampard, but they wouldn't be on the list. So it would be an emotional appointment rather than what you'd call a sensible one. But that's not to say it couldn't work, because I do think Frank Lampard is a really good person, a great manager, a great potential manager. And he has got those traits that we were talking about with Klopp and Pochettino, where he relates to the players. I think he's very good in that regard.
He's a very good communicator. And I think it's interesting, like, the reaction he's got out of players like someone like Mason Mount this season. Mount, I think, is probably the most gifted young player in the country. Mm. And Lampard, and let's not forget Jody Morris in this, because he's a very fine coach too. Mm. But Lampard has the ability to get players like that to respond to him. And that's a very important quality, and with Chelsea sort of growing classes, that's going to be
just a quick one on Chelsea. If we all agree it's been a successful season, think what they might do, and this is going against what I'm saying about Sarri leaving with the fans driving him out. Think what that group of players might have been able to achieve if they were happier.
Yeah,
I mean, we all assuming that they weren't happy from the bulk of that season, and they've still been successful. So get someone in that can galvanise the group. Maybe they can be much, much closer to the top two.
OK, talking of galvanising a group, and I suppose we're going to... You know, we've already intruded into Seb's private grief. Let's get yours out of the way.
Oh, no.
Can I be part of that one too?
Arsenal.
Yeah.
That's going to be a total rebuild job, isn't it?
I hope so, personally. I do feel that win, lose or draw in Baku, Arsenal needed a major rebuild this summer. So it's not a knee-jerk reaction by any stretch of the imagination. I think that there are 6 to 8 players that need to leave to open the door for either younger players to emerge and to come through, or for sensible smart acquisitions to come in and shine. So no, this is the biggest 8 weeks in Unai Emery's career, I think, in terms of who he sanctions moves for, ins and outs, because they have to get it right, Arsenal. So yeah, it's a huge summer ahead. They have to be very creative. And above all else, I think I'm not alone in this as a follower of Arsenal. Most Arsenal fans are very keen for Unai Emery to be ruthless this summer. It's no time for sentiment. He has to have a cull.
Mm. Same sort of question I asked you about Pochettino. Will Emery get the backing he deserves and needs? Because if you look at Arsenal under Stan Kroenke, the business plan comes first.
Do you mean backing in the sense of the fans or the organisation, Mike?
The organisation and also the finances.
Financing, no, by all accounts, because it's I'm hearing a fee of about sort of £45 million as a sort of transfer budget this summer, which now is just not sufficient to compete in the top six. I think Emery, politically, he's very smart. He's someone that seems to not challenge the hierarchy, if that makes sense. And I also, look, I mean, there are realists within within Arsenal's footballing structure. What's happened this season is not really attributable to him. He's made mistakes and he's made errors. There were some very poor team selections towards the end of the season, particularly against Crystal Palace, which still don't sort of bear any kind of scrutiny. But I think you have to give this guy, if he is your manager, you have to give him the opportunity to construct a team that is his. At the moment, he is just a different coach coaching Arsene Wenger's squad generally.
I do agree. He's had a solid start, made mistakes, definitely. But you can only work with what you're given. And the squad was just not good enough in terms of the makeup, the structure of it. There aren't enough characters. There aren't enough tough players mentally in the team. There are players that have had bad habits for too long that just need to leave and for a wave of newcomers to come in. What I would do in his shoes is build the team around the front two, keep those two guys happy and work backwards, basically. Just construct a team. And I think a lot of Arsenal fans are of this mindset now. Construct a team that is hardworking, tough, young, spirited, and go from there and hope that the talent of the guys up top will help them prevail, give them a platform to move forward.
Absolutely. I mean, Adrian, I think one of the most helpful things at the moment would just be a kind of a general acceptance. We are not going to be a top four team for probably 3 or 4 years. And I know there are financial implications with that, but that would create the environment whereby you could construct something semi-long term. You know, you could give players, Guendouzi is an okay player, maybe a very good one in the future. You could give players the leeway to develop, to make mistakes, to have bad games, but you could see some sort of momentum or some general direction taking shape, which creates a differentiation with the Wenger era. And I think that's really important for Arsenal. Mm.
Speaking of the Wenger era, or the man himself, you know, he was over in London last week. I miss him, I must admit. You know, I'm an unashamed admirer.
Yeah.
When you look at him, is he being wasted at the moment? And here's one for you. I don't think this will ever happen.
Yeah.
What about him as a director of football at Man United?
yeah. No, it can never happen. It can never happen there. But look, if they were looking for the strongest candidate, irrespective of their previous allegiances, he'd have to be right up there, wouldn't he? Mm. He's got the contacts, he's got the knowledge. He would make a wonderful director of football. It's a pity, really, that it's not deemed right that he could do that at Arsenal. Because, I mean, they're looking for a technical director. I think it's not possible, really. You do have to move away.
He always hated the idea of it, didn't he? Yeah. He'd always say, right, the day you appoint a director of football is the day before I leave the club.
Yeah.
So it'd be a very interesting bit of hypocrisy.
You'd imagine if he got that role at Arsenal, then, yeah, the problem with that Fergie issue that United have got would happen at Arsenal. So no, he is wasted. He's a fantastic pundit. I'd like to see him on English TV, I have to say. I mean, he works for overseas broadcasters at the moment. He speaks amazingly. And what people don't realise when they see him in the post-match interviews is he always come across quite grumpy, didn't he? But for the limited time that I got to know him, he's just a really charming person.
Also intelligent, really naturally
extremely intelligent. So no, he would make a great director of football. But Manchester United have got a big job on, haven't they? I think what they need is someone that's an expert in that role, someone that's succeeded in that role before, but flanked by a Rio or an ex-player. Yeah. I'm not against having a little team, little team that are strategising for United's future, but I think it has to compose of some, at least one person that's done that job before.
It's not a simple. I mean, we're almost back to the Frank Lampard situation, aren't we? It's not as simple as okay, he knows the club. These people know the club. Let's give them a. Let's form
the club
them into.
It's not that big a deal. Is it, to be honest.
Mike, this is a profession. If you look at sort of the CVs of some of these people, Damian Comoli's got a law degree. These are private sector occupations. They're not jobs for. They could be jobs for footballers, but only footballers who have learnt the new discipline that's involved in this, because he is a spotter of talent. He is an organiser of broad football philosophy, but he was also an overseer of analytics departments, recovery and strength and conditioning. This is a proper occupation. It's not I'll have a go at that, please, kind of job. So you need the specialist in there. You can, as we said, you can supplement him with someone with, you know, the club DNA, whatever that's worth. I'm sure it has a value somewhere. But you need the specialist with the actual skills to do the job.
Yeah. Be interesting. I think Wenger would have been a great international manager, which is a hackneyed way of getting to our last question, which is actually a very hackneyed question as well, to do with the Nations League.
Yes.
Football coming home?
Can we claim that if we win the Nations League? I don't know. Yeah, why
yes,
not?
Yes, we will. Yes, yeah,
we will claim it. And I have faith that we'll win this. And we can all go on our summer holidays feeling 10 feet tall.
Yeah, absolutely. England, the best of those four teams. Definitely.
Well, why not? Let's all get carried away, shall we? It's effectively a four-team tournament, but the future seems very bright. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.